Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. I'm your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good friend and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. A big weekend for you, big weekend. You had a little bit of a family reunion.
I did. The birthday month celebration for the Big 5-0 continues. We had a nice celebration at the neighborhood bar where my kids were raised. And update for all of our listeners who have been hearing us talk about this all month, I did get the espresso machine.
Finally, we can stop talking about it.
And I got a very nice gift of high-end olives from Whole Foods from my good buddy Lee Cantor.
Yes,
that is a
favorite of yours.
Yes, a very thoughtful gift. And this is going to be a gastronomic extravaganza today. In a little bit, we're going to hear from three restaurateurs that won't be strangers to anybody. But we got to start this show off, as we often do on the Dunwoody Chamber Special, with our good friend Debbie Fuse.
Miss Debbie, now you brought with, this isn't an accident, the people that are here today, isn't that right?
That's correct.
And what do they all have in common?
Well, we had Dunwoody at Dusk at Park Place. All three of them are located in the Park Place Center.
And who'd you bring with you?
I brought Alon with Alon's, I brought Doug with McKendrick's, and I brought Brian with Cafe Intermezzo.
Excellent. Now, what happened at that event?
The Chamber decided to do events this year at several of the different centers throughout the city, throughout Dunwoody, to try to bring people into them and get them familiar again with what goes on in each of those centers. So that was the concept and the idea behind the program. All of them had Tasty Delights out for the evening, and we had music there for the evening, and it was just a nice casual walk around. Everybody enjoyed themselves and had a great time.
Was it a success?
It was a very good event.
Now, we're going to get back with you a little later in the show, and you're going to share with us maybe some of the other events that are happening in Dunwoody, but now we're going to get into it and see what these guys...
Absolutely. Have some fun.
All right. All right, well, why don't we start with you, Brian? You've been in that center for quite some time, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about what you guys are up to at Cafe Intermezzo?
Well, we opened in 1979. I saw the center under construction at that time and thought the look of it was somewhat appropriate to a European coffee house. And I had this concept in mind since 71, first time I traveled to my mother's original homeland of Germany, and just loved the European coffee house concept. I didn't really drink coffee at the time, but I thought it was a great place for people to meet and hang out and relax, and lived in Minneapolis at the time. Moved to Atlanta in 77 and was selling imported espresso machines from Italy to restaurants around the Southeast. And
so you got a hint that maybe there's something there, that there's an interest in this higher-end coffee, because at that time, that's pretty early on in the coffee evolution, right, here in America?
It was, and I witnessed that by trying to sell machines for $5,000 or $6,000 or $8,000 to restaurateurs who had no money.
Right, and they're like, how big of coffee are you getting?
You want what for
Brian?
What?
I think I bought one of yours.
You did. No, you bought two, yeah. And you're still paying for them. But it was a matter of proving to people that espresso and cappuccino, espresso minimally at that time in our culture. Cappuccino was very popular, and we sweetened it and created a recipe that we called Cappuccino L'Amour, which made it far more attractive to the American buying public. So I put these into restaurants, but always along the way really wanted to have my own coffee house at the same time. I just saw this as being a great opportunity in our culture for a place, as I saw in Europe, where people, which Alon is totally familiar with, where people go relax, hang out, talk. And at that time, in the 70s in the United States, food service was moving vastly and quickly in the direction of McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken, where everything was fast, everything was big. In European coffee houses and in Europe in general, everything is smaller.
And slower, right? It's more
and
relaxed.
Slower. That's right, exactly. So, you know, they might come and spend 2 hours and read the paper in those days, now use their laptop. So I just, as I saw Park Place under construction, I thought that with the park in the center, after which they named the center of the center, I saw this as an opportunity for a pretty place that had the charm and feel that was atypical of typical malls that that we have in the United States.
Right, this was more outside, and you can walk around.
That's right, that's right. And big trees and grass and mm-hmm. our patio facing that park in the center I thought would be totally appropriate. So I negotiated with the owners who did a great job in putting this together, and Mac Taylor and Harvey Mathis. And it was a... and it obviously worked out and got open the end of 79, and sales were very, very slow, but yeah. grew.
Well, you had to educate the marketplace, right?
Yes, I think so, to a great degree. That's exactly right. And educate the marketplace on not what we offered as much as what we were, what mm-hmm. we were as a concept. And our primary product is the environment more than food and beverage.
And then you're known for coffee, desserts, and how did all that kind of evolve, the menu and...
That evolved from the European coffee houses. Konditorei, for example, in Germany or Austria, especially Germany, is a place where they have beautiful pastries lined up. Again, Alain is totally familiar with this. And those pastries are, along with the coffee, and especially the coffee, are a reason for existing, reason for being in this environment and relaxing. This goes back to a gentleman with the unfortunate name of Kolschitzky. Kolschitzky was a...
Yeah, he needs a rebrand.
Right, right. Well, he in 1597 opened a cafe in Vienna, the first documented cafe where there's still a copy of his business license in a file mm-hmm. somewhere. And Kolschitzky was sort of a transient individual living in Vienna when the Turks were invading, and they brought coffee with them. The Turks were one of the first cultures to really...
And their first delivery, coffee delivery.
That's right, exactly, that's right. And they said that somehow they met with this guy Kolschitzky and set him up to be making the coffee for the Turkish soldiers. Mm-hmm. And he did, and when they left and moved on to maraud other areas, they left some coffee with him, so he opened a cafe. And then he apparently had the source in Turkey to get this done. That was the first coffee house. But the premise, getting back to the menu, the premise really is coffee and pastries. Then we do have food items because alcohol. We have a wide variety because the freedom of choice is kind of a main staple of what my concept is all about, to come in and choose to have whatever you want, drink, eat whatever you want, spend as much time as you want, and do exactly what you please, as long as it's legitimate and legal.
And it's kind of dark there, so that's a gray area, right?
Some of it is as a gray area, that's right.
So I grew up on 8 Mile Creek Road in Northwest Florida, and it may not surprise you to know that it was probably intermezzo. My Yankee wife took me there and bought me my first espresso. And, of course, I really enjoyed it, but... I want to validate your earlier comment about environment, because what really blew me away is the person that you had on staff describing all the desserts. They don't do that at the local donut shop off of 8 Mile Creek Road. So there's a great deal to the environment, the atmosphere. It was fabulous, and of course, like I just got probably my fifth espresso machine for my birthday, so I've been hooked ever since.
Heard you mention. Good man.
I want to add a little bit to the culture of coffee houses in Europe. So on my way to America, I was in Europe, and I spent my budget back then, 86, was $30 a day. So I went to Vienna, and I stopped in one of those coffee shops. I mean, it is so – I can't explain how beautiful it is and how expensive it was. My budget was $30, and to get a coffee – with a piece of cake was like over $10, 86.
So a third of your net worth went to that meal?
No, I couldn't afford it. But they didn't need to sell food. If they just sold coffee and cake, they did fine. Mm-hmm.
So now, Alain, why don't you share a little bit about what's going on in your place? Because you have the coffee and you have desserts as well. So how did you, in the same shopping center, so what is the difference between your establishment and Brian's?
Well, we are more of a pastry shop that kind of got steroids, you know, and we kept adding over the years. I mean, we started as a pastry shop, making a little bit of bread and some desserts and sandwiches, and basically we kept adding and adding and adding. You know, some people add a lot of location and own maybe several restaurants. You know, for me, it was, you know, the concept kept growing, and I'm doing all my hobbies, I guess.
All your favorite things.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is like a toy for you. Right?
It is, pretty much. Everybody will tell you that, you know.
An expensive toy.
It is an expensive toy. Because sometimes the investment doesn't really make sense, but I have a good time. So,
two words about a lawn. Lamb sandwich. Is that still on the menu?
Yes, it is.
Oh, man.
What are the go-to menu items that your raving fans just keep won't let you take off?
I didn't try to take off much, really. You know,
so it just keeps getting bigger?
Unfortunately, that's what happens sometimes. You try to think, you know, I'm going to take this one out, I'm going to take this one out. You know, I mean, I took things that wouldn't sell, you know, and you still get complaints. But I think it's typical. Any one of us in this table probably have the same experience. And whatever you take out, even if you don't sell a lot, somebody's going to complain.
Right. That's the one time the guy's going to come in asking
exactly.
for it, right?
Yes.
So now at your place, you have the bakery, you have the chocolate.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that was kind of unusual for that kind of a space, right?
Yes. It's chocolate was my newest toy. So right. when I opened over there, I mean, you have to remember, you know, we started in, 92 in a space that was 1,300 square feet with a walk-in inside and everything we do. So it was pretty incredible what we did in that tiny little space mm-hmm. for the first 8 years. So, you know, I couldn't do a lot of things I wanted to do. And, you know, I did chocolate, but I would do it like during a holiday, I would make a few boxes just for fun.
Right.
So when I moved over here, I looked for more things to add and create this, you know, Disneyland of, you know.
Right, you created a chocolate pastry, room, yeah. right? Yeah. You had a whole room just for chocolate?
Yeah, but I'm talking about the whole space, you know, right. having the dessert and having the bread and having the sandwiches and, you know, have like a culinary experience
right.
that, you know, we make everything there. So that's, the chocolate was kind of the last thing.
Now, you had gelato for a while, right?
I did. And, you know, gelato is something that probably is not the best fit for this kind of space. You know, gelato, you have to sell really a lot, you know.
Right.
You have to be in very high pedestrian area, so you can really move a lot. And it was a choice of what am I going to do with the space. So, mm-hmm. you know, I made a choice to put pizza and put a brick oven, kind of goes with our concept
right.
instead of the gelato.
Right, because there's a lot of prepared foods to go.
Yes, yes.
Go ahead.
So, no, I was going to ask about hiring people because yes. that has got to be a consistent challenge of hiring good quality people and hanging
difficult.
On yeah. to them. Speak to that a little bit, if you will. What's the secret?
What's the secret? I got two colleagues over here. They'll probably can share the same pains that every one of us in this industry.
Do you go to their place, find somebody good, and steal them, or is that what you're
if
saying?
If I could, you know.
we don't allow him in our place. But I want to make a comment on that, too, because my people have been there. I've been there since 1979. Brian and I were probably the first two tenants out there. And I still have people that are still there from 1979 and 80.
Wow.
My manager's been there 14 years. Another one's been there 9 years. I got a couple of the cooks have been there 18, 19 years.
Mm-hmm.
My controller's been there over 20 years. And that's really a big, big, big item in the whole thing because – the people make a huge difference when they walk in the door. Mark Rosano is our night guy. He knows your name, mm-hmm. and he greets you on the way in, and he knows where you seated last time and whatever. Makes a huge, huge difference.
That longevity is a great testimony to Doug McKendrick, too, because you don't keep people like that, quality people, without being a good boss.
Well, keep the people and keep a restaurant going. I mean, restaurants aren't exactly the most stable businesses, as you guys all can attest.
No,
they come and go.
I kind of agree with you on that, and I just was trying to think back to 1979 when Brian and I went out there, and there was a lot of farmland. Where you have Best Buys and all that stuff up front, and I don't think the Crown Plaza was even there.
It was not.
When we got there.
It was not where Best Buy is. Was the last Sproul Farm. It still had cows grazing.
Yeah, yeah. So we went out there, and I'll bet you there weren't six or eight restaurants. So I went around this weekend and started looking around. And I've got a list of about 30 to 40, and these are just the big ones.
Right, and there's some big high-end restaurants. There are all kinds of price points there,
yeah.
and it's a competitive marketplace.
Oh, it's unbelievable. But also, I think the whole area has grown immensely. You take a look at the hotels and the hotel rooms around there and the traffic that comes through. It's really been unbelievable. But I was really trying to remember back and just vision what we came into back in 79. Now, when did you open, Brian? Because I opened August 26th. You were after that, weren't you?
We were December 3rd.
Okay.
Oh, so just a
you know, you've always been telling me that you opened before I did, and now
we have it on the
record. He just wanted to get it straight for the record.
I did, because you opened in August of 80, actually.
No, it was August 26th in 1979, Mr. Olson. So,
he has some scars.
I'll tell you, Brian and I have been friends all the way through all this. Now, this other guy sitting to my right line, he's kind of a new guy. And so we're kind of letting him in a little bit, but that whole shopping center has really been unbelievable. Mac Taylor and Harvey Mathis put it together, and it's been sold two or three times. But when they put it together and did all the center place and everything in it, it has really been a great place. And our new landlords, Coro Realty, I think have done an incredible job of upgrading. Because it had gotten kind of old there for a while, but we've been out there for a long time, I'll tell you.
Now, you guys obviously were there before Dunwoody became Dunwoody. How have you seen the transition into making Dunwoody a city?
I want to kind of talk about that a little bit, because I think Dunwoody's been fabulous. I live over in Sandy Springs, and Sandy Springs has been awesome. The key is having people around that you can talk to, rather than driving 20 miles over to Decatur and sitting around and not getting any help. I mean, I can walk into the mayor's office in a second and get an answer or two.
Yeah, they're afraid of you.
Yeah. there's nothing wrong with that, Brian. That's why I'm a little concerned about this guy sitting on here, because he's my size, too.
He's a good-sized fella.
Yeah, I think Brian, he's a half-inch taller, Doug, actually.
No, I don't think so. Brian's a little guy around here. But the Dunwoody Chamber has been great for business, and the perimeter area has just been growing, and I mean, I think, if I'm not mistaken, we have the most office space of any area in the whole city of Atlanta, I think.
Mm-hmm. And one huge parameter that's been a dramatic change that we've all seen is the residential aspect, because the first 10 years we were open, or 15 years even, there were very few people living within 5 miles of our shopping
center. Yeah, Perimeter Center East at that point in time, which is just the roundabout behind us, was all small, one-level office buildings. Mm-hmm. And all that's been torn down to 10, 12, 15 stories, and there are a lot more people out there now, which really, really is nice.
And large businesses. That's probably good for all your business.
It's significant.
It's been awesome.
Now, Doug, did you know from day one that you were going with steak, or did you wrestle with some other concepts?
I started off with a place called Elon. I'm having trouble here with that. Was my right? Elon. It was Elon.
I used to spend some time there when I was 25 and single.
Uh-huh.
It was the place to go.
Better than $30 a day budget, too.
I hate to say this, but I was single at the time, too. But it was sort of back in the disco era, and it was really awesome. We had a great run for almost 9 years. By that time, we had opened Mispia, an Italian concept, and in Park Place Cafe, which we had Tony Valentine and a bunch of other piano players, which was just a great, great run. So we've had a good time out there. But getting back into the steak business, you always see things change hands. In a lot of restaurants, the Italian or whatever went down, or quite frankly, I can name six new Italian restaurants that came out there after I had my Italian restaurant. And I wanted something that was going to stay around for a long time. So I'm from Chicago, and the meat comes out of Chicago, and there's a lot of steakhouses up there, and so that's why I went that route, because those have been up there since 1920, 1930, and they're still there.
And do you still have a disco ball, anything from Elon's that a little nostalgic? The back rooms got
I got to tell you a little story about that. We had a problem one night, and the disco ball fell and knocked a guy out on the floor.
Oh.
So my insurance agent and I, he came up with the idea, let's go buy a plastic disco ball. So we threw the real one away, and when the insurance people came in, the lawyer, we just bounced this, and we said,
look, what is he talking about?
How could this hurt anybody?
All right.
So I hope this doesn't get recorded.
The statute of limitations.
Statute of limitations is probably over on that one.
What did the guy get who was hit by the ball?
You mean for me?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. Somehow you figured out a way to blame him for that, right?
His lawyer looked at it and maybe said, well, you must have been drinking too much or something, but this thing couldn't hurt anybody. So,
all right, so I want to get some counsel for Joe Sixpack. If you want a great steak, you go to McKendrick's. But for Joe Sixpack at the house, what's a common mistake that we make when we're trying to put a good steak on and that – you would know, look, guys, just do this one thing or don't do this one thing, and you're going to have a better steak.
Well, you got a real problem with that whole question. My whole thing is I know where the kitchen is. It's in the back. I'm a CPA, an accountant.
And so hire a chef. That's the first thing.
Yeah, and we've had Tom and Cella there for probably 14 years now or something like that. But if you ever come in the restaurant and ask for me and they say he's in the kitchen cooking.
Run away.
You want to turn away and get out of there.
And to that point, you asked a question earlier. 94%, according to the National Restaurant Association, 94% of all independent restaurant concepts fail within the first 3 years of operation. And these two gentlemen, and I consider myself a fortunate one as well. I've been lucky to be around. But to Doug's example and statement, I think one of the reasons I saw over the years when I was selling espresso machines to restaurants who were failing was the fact that they would know the front of the house and have no control over the back, or they'd be in the back of the house. This was the biggest problem. They'd be in the back, and the guy was a really good chef but knew nothing about numbers and managing the money and didn't have a Doug McKendrick who knows money. So he runs the operation, and he can hire people and obviously has and maintain good people that manage the operations back there. But you don't have to be a great chef. Andrew Carnegie was asked once, how is it that you're so successful at steelmaking? And he said, I'm not. He said, I know very little about steelmaking, but I have the ability to hire and keep good engineers who know how to make steel. And it's the same premise.
I absolutely totally agree with that. You know, you've got to hire really, really good people. And you see so many chefs open a place, and they can run the kitchen. They have no idea what's going on in the front of the house, or vice versa. The guy comes in, he's been a manager, and doesn't know the back of the house. And if you don't stay on top of that, and Rick Marinacci is my controller. He used to be a chef with us. And it took me about 3 or 4 or 5 years to teach him debits and credits, but he has learned all that. But just think about it. If you have a chef checking the invoices and staying on top of stuff rather than people just sign this, let's go, it makes a huge difference. And that's, you know, Brian's right on with that. You really have to be on top of everything. And my wife has been, she has done the front of the house, whether it be the decor, stainless, you know, everything in there, and she's on top of the menus. I try to run the business, and the key is we've got people there since 1980, which is, I think, incredible, and I love them to death.
Now, how have you seen Atlanta evolve into the restaurant city that it is now? It seems like you can't watch the Food Network without seeing somebody from Atlanta on, you know, one of the shows there, Iron Chef, Chopped. I just saw Kevin Rathbun win Chopped last week. That's got to be unusual for a city this size to be that kind of have that much of an impact in the food world.
I'm not sure I have a comment on that, but I remember when I came here and we were playing Georgia Tech and we went to Fan and Bill's, and there were only like 3 or 4 really restaurants in those days. Now, this was back in the 60s. You guys probably weren't even around then, I know. But it really has evolved. I mean, and there's all kinds of shows, and we have some great chefs in town. I'll tell you a place I enjoyed. It's not out in this area, but I just went to the King and Duke, which used to be Nava's, and that was impressive. I mean, there's a lot of stuff changing hands, and it's unbelievable. I mean, I went around looking at some of these places, and I saw 2 or 3 places in our area that are closed and will be something else in 6 months.
Mm-hmm. And that's a Fort Fry restaurant.
Yes.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And he does some amazing concepts.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
And he's doing another one across the street, isn't he, at another of Pano's old restaurants.
Yeah, yeah. And the Optimist down on Moores Mill or something is a really, really good place.
I'm looking forward to seeing Alon on one of those national television
shows.
For
that. Yeah.
He's a star.
Yeah, you got the look, man. You
I
got
don't
the...
know.
So what is next for you? Are you going to expand the concept, more locations? What are you going to do, you think?
We're thinking about it. You know, that's a possibility that we'll open more locations. You know, when we moved to Dunwoody, that was a very difficult move for us because we went from, you know, a small place. Everything was done there. And we signed a lease in 2007. And then in 2008, when we were ready to open the doors... Wow. You know what happened in 2008.
Oh, yeah.
So that was, you know, when you have more employees and you have customers, that's a little bit scary.
That's a red flag.
So,
I'll have to ask Doug if that's bad. Is that bad when you have more employees than customers? You're the accountant.
I think that's very, very bad. But he's right on. 2008 and 2009 were really, really, really bad years.
Yes.
And particularly in my business because all the expense accounts were totally cut off.
Right.
And it just changed our whole concept. We lost 25% of our business. We're back up there now, but that's a lot to lose. Yes. But even then, we were still profitable, which I'm happy to say. Yeah. So
Alon, you made it through, obviously, that kind
of
turbulence.
Yes, it took us a couple of years to fight it out. And, you know, we made a lot of changes in the space, you know, and tried to kind of improve. And
I want to say something on that. Your outside area is awesome. That has really made you, I think. Because you've got, 40 seats outside now?
That changed the whole dynamic of the store.
It's packed every day I come in, which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. That was, that's because all those improvements that we've done is spending a lot of money when I was making no money. And that was kind it's kind of the opposite reaction of you're not making any money. You're trying to save everything. But I think it's the worst mistake to make in business, that you kind of roll back and you say, I'm not going to do anything. And then I think you kind of die, you know. So when you're not doing well, you got to see what you have to do. And you got to take whatever you got and push forward to try to break through that recession. And
Alon, I have to correct you. I heard the landlord gave you all the money.
The landlord would be happy to help you, but we can reduce your rent. And we can't. So we got zero help from the landlord, I will say that.
I think I've heard that story.
Yeah, that was before CORE, by the way, just to be fair. So
The outside, and I think the lamb sandwich. I'm not letting go of the lamb sandwich. I love the lamb sandwich.
So now Dunwoody's a city now. You got the whole area is booming. The whole perimeter area is booming. You guys are expanding in different ways, and you're expanding as well, right?
Mm-hmm. We are. We are. We're moving into franchising, and we have a licensed location at Atlanta Airport, and then our two locations, the original one in Park Place and then the second one that was at 1845 Peachtree across from Piedmont Hospital for 25 and a half years. And on March 24th, we closed that and opened the next day at 11th and Peachtree, mm-hmm. next to the Lowe's Hotel in the heart of Midtown.
And I want to say something on that, because I went down there with Brian, and I'll tell you, the architecture and everything interior I was just blown away again. I mean, that's one thing that's always been great about your place is the European architecture, I guess I call it. And your operation next to Lowe's Hotel,
mm-hmm.
going to be great.
We've been very fortunate to be there. Yeah. Love the landlord, love the area. Is what Steve Selig and Scott Selig have done in that area, and their partners, the Daniel Corporation. They've done an amazing thing of taking old, grungy buildings in Midtown and tearing them all down, parceling it, and turning it into a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful property. And there are apartments for rent. There are condominia. All kinds of residential activity going
on. Where you have that density that you need to have that flow of customers.
Yes, exactly. Right. Exactly, which is so conducive to the European coffee house.
Right, where you can hang out, linger, and mm-hmm. it's okay.
Yeah,
right.
And have a pot of tea or a cappuccino for 3 hours if you want to.
Right.
Fortunately, most people don't do that.
Right.
But it works.
So now, Debbie, you must be so proud to have these people here and being part of the Dunwoody business community.
I am thrilled that they're all here. They're three of our just finest people that I think we have in the area, and the longevity of their businesses has been incredible as well. So it's great to have them.
Now, why don't we go around the room and give our listeners the websites and the coordinates so that we can so they can come your way to check you guys out.
All right.
Start with you, Brian.
Thank you very much. We are, of course, in Park Place. We are not easy to find because our signage is a bit limited, but we're in Park Place on the left side next to Fidelity Investments and Balance Hair Salon, and you'll know Cafe Intermezzo by the outdoor patio. The website is cafeintermezzo.com, cafeintermezzo.com, pronounced intermezzo, not intermezzo, as a lot of Americans like to say. And by the way, Cafe Intermezzo means, and I chose this name 40 years ago because it means coffee intermission in Italian. Intermezzo was created for the opera as a word meaning intermission between operatic acts.
And this is an intermission between meals?
Intermission in one's day, yes.
There you go.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Now, Doug, website?
Well, since Brian went that way, I want to go back to Elon because...
We're going to go back to Elon. We're bringing it back?
No, I'm not going to bring it back. Not 4 o'clock in the morning. But I want to go back to the name because people don't know what it means. It means tall, debonair, and dashing.
And that,
stop laughing.
That's a self-portrait.
What language?
In your mind, that's a self-portrait.
No, let me finish. I was the tall.
Yes.
I was not the debonair and the dashing.
I saw you dashing
what
after
language?
Some beautiful lady.
In what language is Ilan?
Is it French? I don't know.
Macandriana.
Because in Hebrew, it's the name of a tree.
Let's go on. Let's go back. Let's go back to the Kendrick Steakhouse. Is at 4505 Ashford Dunwood Road, and we're on the southeastern side of it, next to Spa Seidel. And we have been in the same spot that Ilan was. So I basically have been in that area since 1979, August 26th.
I guess now everybody's stuck with you. You're not going anywhere anytime soon, right?
The place is paid for, and we're doing well, and I love my people that work there, and we're not going anywhere.
All right. Now, Alon?
Well, our website is obviously we're in Park Place like everybody else, and we are right at the front of it, so it's very hard to miss it.
I got to interrupt here.
Go ahead.
How come you got the top of the sign on Ashford Dunwoody?
And it's alphabetical.
He's the tall debonair one.
How many square feet do you pay rent for? How many square feet do you pay rent for?
7,150, and you're 12,000, aren't you?
That's right. I'm almost 12,000, so that's why I get the top one.
That answers it for me.
Does it answer?
Well, your signage doesn't look too good either.
My signage is non-existent. It doesn't look bad at all.
The only reason I'm okay is I have my own sign, which I don't have anybody on it but me, which goes back to the Elan days in 79. But I have still, every time I see your sign,
it kind of bugs you a little.
I'm not happy about that.
So at least you have that, Alon. You have that. Every time he sees it, he's a little irked. That's a win. I take that as a win.
All right, you can go now. I mean, you can go ahead and continue on with your.
So we have, we offer a full menu, breakfast, lunch, and early dinner, not really dinner at this point at least. We have a website. We do a lot of catering. We do a lot of corporate catering. So our website is Alon's, ALONS.com. And you can place your order on there and come see us during lunchtime. And I think that's it.
All right. Well, Debbie, anything going on at Dunwoody that we should know about?
You know, our fun never ends. You know that.
I know
you
that.
You know how it goes. Yes, we do have a couple things coming up. But one of the things is we're working with the Nature Center this weekend doing the Butterfly Festival, which is all day Saturday. So anybody that's listening would should come out and spend the day and bring the children because it's a fun day for everyone. That runs, I think, from 8 to 5 on Saturday. And I have my young professionals group, which is going to be meeting on Wednesday. And they will be meeting at Marlowe's Tavern, which is in the village. I have our Coffee Connections, which is our speaker series that we do every month. And our speaker series this month is actually going to be Steve Dollinger with the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education. And he's going to be an awesome speaker because he's really going to talk about the economic impact of education and how we should be partnering together to make that best.
Right.
May I say, by the way, to that point, Debbie, I'm sorry to interrupt that. We're working very hard in Dunwoody to bring the schools into the city of Dunwoody, which is going to take some time. Tom Taylor, for whom my wife works, is our state representative, and he's working on it in the legislature. So,
what do you mean by that?
That meaning pulling the schools into this, they'll become city of Dunwoody schools eventually, taking them away from DeKalb County school system.
A long process, but it'll happen eventually. That's right. Anything good is worth waiting for, right? We have our Chamber and Heels group, which will be meeting on the 20th of the month, and we always have fun with that group, and none of these guys can come. But we always have lunch at McKendrick's that day. So
there
our
you go.
Group loves to come. The other thing that I have that's really, I think, important is that we have a business academy. And our business academy this month is actually going to be talking about mobile technology and how to integrate all those 14 pieces of things that all of us have, our smartphones and our computers and our tablets and everything else, and getting them all working together in the right way. So those are the biggies right there that are coming up. And it's always fun. We never end. Just go to our website. It's dunwoodycommerce.org. Or give us a call at the office at 678-244-9700, and we'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Good stuff. Well, thank you for putting this show together, Debbie, and we look forward every month to seeing what's going on in the city of Dunwoody. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on High Velocity Radio.